fellow griever. You have found the Leftover Pieces Suicide Loss Conversations podcast, and I am Melissa, your host. I am with you on this journey because my 21-year-old son, Alex, died by suicide on August 7th of 2016. Since launching this podcast in late 2020, I have followed my heart and expanded the Leftover Pieces to include books and an online community where I host Zoom support groups every week. It is there, in this community, that I lead other parents who have lost a child by suicide from survival toward hope and into healing. The website is also a resource hub, a connecting point for all survivors of suicide loss. You can find me, ways to connect with me, and links to everything that I'm doing in the community on my website, theleftoverpieces.com. Know that I'm always open to suggestions and feedback. And if you know someone that I should connect with to be on the podcast, please let me know that as well. So now, I invite you to join me for real conversations, candid talk on hard topics surrounding the loss of our loved ones by suicide. I talk to other loss survivors, mental health experts, advocates, and on alternate weeks, I offer shorter solo episodes where I go down the rabbit hole to discuss things that have been on my mind or possibly parts of my journey that I feel would be beneficial to share. Every week, we explore the questions that haunt us, seek the courage to uncover the healing tools within us, and offer the comfort of a community that we all need so very much. It's true that our hearts and lives have been shattered, but come along with me, and together, let's choose to find meaning and even happiness amid the leftover pieces before us. Welcome. Hello, fellow grievers, and welcome to Season 5, Episode 10 of the Leftover Pieces Suicide Loss Conversations podcast, and I'm Melissa, your host. Today, I'm going to share a conversation that I had recently with a woman named Jen Hoy. And in Jen's own words, she is passionate about mental health and suicide prevention. She's a board member of the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention in the Massachusetts chapter, and a suicide loss survivor herself. Jen lost her brother, Teddy Fusco Jr., to suicide in May of 2017. Before July of 2021, Jen Hoy hadn't run in nearly 30 years when she was on her cross-country high school team. Several years after her brother Teddy's suicide, Jen began walking for her physical and her mental health. Jen was inspired by her brother to complete hashtag Healing for Miles remembrance walks and runs in honor of others who have died by suicide. Since September 2020, she has dedicated Healing Miles to hundreds of men, women, and children from across the globe. Today, Jen has completed a number of races representing Team AFSP, including the Boston Marathon in both 2021 and 2022, the Los Angeles Marathon, which was actually a half marathon in 2022, the Chicago Marathon that same year, and Grandma's Marathon in 2023. Jen also completed her first ultra marathon to celebrate her upcoming 50th birthday. Her goal is to support the AFSP's mission to bring hope to those impacted by suicide and to run Healing Miles in memory of others. In every state of the U.S., Jen has been featured on a number of podcasts, radio shows, and international video panels, as well as the news media. She lives in Taunton, Massachusetts with her husband, three kids, three rescue dogs, two of which were present during our interview, although I don't think you'll hear them. They were very well behaved. She also has a cat and a whole flock of chickens. I loved having this conversation with Jen for multiple reasons. not the smallest of which is her lively Sicilian disposition. But we also get very personal in her journey and talk about why she took that first walk that eventually became running. We talk about the toll that grief had on her, which is why these walks that she initially took that really were just meant for her to be able to have time to talk with Teddy became so much more, and something that has not only impacted her life greatly, but now has gone on to impact others around the globe. So without further ado, let's welcome Jen. Hi, Jen. Welcome to the podcast. How are you this morning?
Good. Thank you for having me.
It's my pleasure. I'm really enthusiastic about the conversation that we're about to have. And then that sad moment hit me, and not enthusiastic for the reason, because the reason that we are brought together is by mutual loss. So I would like you to start out the way that everybody starts out and share your loss story with everybody that's listening.
Sure. It's difficult because it's been almost 7 years, and some days it feels like just yesterday. But in May of 2017, my brother Teddy died by suicide. It was a shock to all of us. He was a son, brother, grandson, nephew, cousin, friend, everybody's favorite uncle, even though my kids were his only actual niece and nephews. He was kind. He was gentle. He loved Boston. He loved Boston sports and Forrest Gump. And he made everyone laugh all the time. He was, a clown since he was a kid, and always willing to help. He was always the first one to help, always the first one to support somebody going through a rough time. So imagining my brother feeling just completely hopeless and making that decision, that really was difficult. He was a ranger at the Massachusetts State House for more than 20 years, and he touched so many lives, not just friends and family, but even perfect strangers. People shared with us Teddy stories, after he passed, and realized like how great of an impact he had during his lifetime. And like, you probably feel the same, but my life will always be measured in two parts, the time before and the time after.
Yeah, I completely understand, because I've even come just in probably just sometime in this year to where, and I always have after in quotes, but I talk about this as our after life, because I do almost always without fail when I'm thinking of something, that's what comes to mind. Was Alex alive? Was it before Alex died? Was it after Alex died? And so there is, when there's this significant of a loss in our life, it becomes a line, if you will, it becomes a measuring tool. Not that we didn't have others before as well. I think we tend to forget those when something more significant takes its place. But we did. We all have delineations and things that we think, oh, was that before? I'll just use an example. Was that before I got married? Was that after? Mm-hmm. Right? Was that before I had kids? Was it after? So we all have those, but they don't seem to stick quite as long and be quite as prominent as a loss like this. And that must be because of the traumatic nature of it. Having children is a milestone, but it's not generally what we consider a traumatic event in our life. Raising them can be sometimes, but
all of those milestones, they just feel like a spot on my timeline. And, mm-hmm. and that moment that we lost my brother in May 5th, 2017, almost feels like a chasm. Like mm-hmm. I'm looking across this big canyon at what my life was before. And there's no way that the two of them will ever blend together the way your life continues to blend after you marry and have kids and start a job or buy a house, things like that.
You're right. And it's funny you use the word chasm, because I used that in, I think, the most recent episode that's out. I talked about this this is in the last year almost, but I've started talking about this type of a loss as kind of a tectonic plate shift. As to where maybe some of our life, and I often talk about that, I had lots of cracks in my life before, but I had become really good at, when a crack would develop, squeezing harder so it would just, everything held together, right?
And so there might have been a lot of cracks going on, but I was like, I just kept squeezing. I'm like, I'm not going to break. It's going to be fine. I can handle these cracks. And then it was like a tectonic shift when Alex, and then that what happens is all those other cracks become more prevalent. They split open and then you have to deal with those. But then you have this big chasm that no matter how hard you try, those plates have shifted. They're not going back, right? So you now have to learn to live with that chasm, which means you have to build bridges. You have to, you know, plant beautiful things. You have to have outcrop villages that become new. You have to develop your whole life now around this chasm. And it's how you do it that's so important. So, and I think that's part of what with your journey that you're going to unfurl a little bit for us, that is a good analogy because you've worked really hard to do that, to build something meaningful. But not before you had years of kind of repressed grief, if you will. And I know some of that ties to, you know, being in a traditional Sicilian family and things like that. But talk a little bit about that piece of how for a number of years you felt like you weren't even really kind of acknowledging, or I'm not sure the right word you want me to use, but you weren't acknowledging it on the level you needed to.
I wasn't acknowledging it at all. I mean, not even on any level.
It didn't exist. Zero,
like,
right?
You know, when you talk about that tectonic plate shift, like I was living in that chasm. It was just a blank space. And
you found a ledge on a shelf in the chasm and you were
just
there.
Existed. And I think, you know, one of the things that I tried so hard as like the older sister and, you know, the responsible mom and was to be strong for my parents, be strong for my kids. And so putting all your effort into being strong, whatever that means, meant that I had these years where I have very few memories, very few. I just, all of my energy went into surviving. I went to work. I took care of my family, tried to maintain our normal like family dynamic with my parents, my kids, extended family. And the only emotion that I felt during that time was just rage, anger. Like, obviously it was grief, but it was manifesting as anger. And I was angry at everything and everyone. And that's the piece that I remember most about those early years is just how angry I was all the time. And it makes me sad because these are years of my kids growing up that I have very few actual memories of.
Yeah, we don't always realize, I mean, we definitely don't realize that when we're in the midst of that survival, and especially if we are willing to live in the cloud of grief without trying to peel back the curtain, when we're doing that, we don't realize how much we are shielded, how much we're not going to remember. Because like in the midst of it, there's a part of us that thinks, I don't feel much different than I ever have. So we don't even consider that we're not going to remember things. And then later you look back and go, I've had people say things to me about stuff in those first few years. And I just look at them and I'm thinking, oh my God. And then I start doing that thing and start thinking, do I really not remember? And I don't. Like, I know it's in there somewhere, but I don't. I can't pull it out of that file where we can usually pull things out. You know, it might take us a little more digging the older we get, but we can usually pull it out. And some of that's just gone for me. Yeah. So it's interesting how that happens. So what occurred that caused you to decide that you had, is probably a good word, that you needed to take a different direction, that you needed to look upwards in that chasm and decide to climb out, if you will?
Well, you know, honestly, it was pretty organic and I didn't make a conscious decision. It's COVID-19, the pandemic happened and I was a remote worker. I was used to being alone in my house all day long. Everyone's at school or work or whatever. And I could just be angry in peace and do my thing. And if I needed to just scream, I could. It didn't matter because nobody was home but me and my dog. Suddenly, everybody's home in our little Cape Cod house on top of one another, all of this togetherness. And I didn't want to be like this angry mom trapped with my kids in the house. I just knew I needed to escape. I was like almost like vibrating with like anger and energy. But I didn't know what to do. So I took my dog, Penelope, and we're like, I'm going to go for a walk. which everyone kind of looked at me because in the year since my brother had died, I had gained nearly 100 pounds because I was stuffing down my emotions with food. I was not sleeping like maybe an hour or two a night. I would stay up all night watching reruns of Law and Order SVU. And they were like, oh, okay. And I just went out and I walked to the end of my street. It's like 700 feet to the stop sign. And I needed to take a break. But the whole time I'm walking, I was talking in my head to my brother, not very nice words, more than a few swear words. Like, I can't believe this. Like, you're not here for this. Like, my brother was one of those people that would have been prepared for anything. And like years before the pandemic, he's like, you know, you really should have like, we called it the apocalypse shelf in the basement with like staples in case we needed it. And I'm thinking like, God, you would have been so prepared for this. You would have known what to do. Like, and you would have made us laugh through the whole thing. And you're not here. And I'm here. And I can't even go see mom and dad. And everyone's home. And I'm pissed.
And like, I've gained 100 pounds because
I gained 100 pounds. I don't sleep. I'm miserable. And, you know, that first walk, like when I got home, I felt a little more calm. I wasn't shaking like with anger. And so I was like, wow, you know, that kind of felt good. Why didn't I try it again? And over time, it became a routine. And over time, I went a little further and further. And my conversations with my brother got kinder. And it was less about how could you do this and more about, you know what? I really miss you. I miss yelling at you. I miss like sending you silly text messages. I miss you getting Joey riled up and teaching him things that I really don't want my 5-year-old to be taught. Like, and, you know, I would give anything to have you back. And it wasn't until those conversations shifted that I realized, you know, I never really grieved. And then it started to flow in. And so those walks became really healing for me in so many different ways and enabled me to be more present for my family.
When we first talked, you had alluded to the fact that kind of like Forrest Gump, you just started walking, right? Where he said, and then I started running. And then a few minutes before you started telling this story, you talked about how much Teddy loved Boston and Forrest Gump and things like that. And it immediately connected it all for me, because even though you had said that the other day, I now see the connection, whether you do or not, between, you know, I just started walking, you know, it's like you can hear that in Forrest Gump's voice, right?
Absolutely.
I did it a bad justice, but it's true, because he would say, and then I started running, you know, and so it was like Teddy was like, well, just start walking, sis, and we'll hash this out. And yeah. It sounds like that's what you kind of did through each session, because it's almost like you were doing therapeutic walking. Through each walking therapy session, you were hashing out everything you needed to with him, by yourself. With him, not a therapist as a third party, but you took on kind of your own therapeutic walking journey, which then, you know, doubled as a health incentive for you as well, right? Because then that becomes a thing. And I love the tie-in. So I didn't want to miss, you know, talking about that. But it brings us to, and then eventually it went to running, right? Eventually you did.
Yes.
So because now you're running, which anybody that follows you, by the end of this, anybody listening will be following you also. But anybody that follows you on Instagram, we'll talk about that in a little bit, knows that you now run and do marathons and run in honor of other people and things like that. So we'll get to that in a minute. But the walking became running and was just a form of therapy, and then has gone on to help spur what you do and with the form of mental health awareness and suicide awareness and prevention. But I want to talk really briefly about, as we capitalize on what you were just talking about, how you are now almost 7 years in, you're behind where I am. So I understand very much where you're at in your journey as far as, you know, timelines go, and that this does get easier to carry. I often say to people, it's maybe not that it's easier. We've just become more accustomed to it. We're stronger under the weight of it. I hate the word strong, which you put in air quotes before. People didn't see that when you talked about being strong, you air quoted it. And I just did too, because most of us hate that thing when people go, you're so strong, I don't know how you could do this. You're so strong. And you're like, I wasn't given a choice. I'm not strong, because inside we feel like that's the opposite of what we are. Right. But so you were going through that, you know, facade of that. But even at where we are at six, it's almost 7 years and almost 8 years, the surprises, the emotional surprises and dysregulation that can still happen at any time are there. And I want you to talk a little bit about that, kind of to what we were talking about earlier, if you will.
Sure. You know, almost 7 years in, there's still good days and bad days. And like the whole strong piece, or when people say you're so resilient, like you said, I didn't have a choice. I could either be stuck where I was in my recliner watching SVU all hours of the day and night, or I could choose to live. And so I choose to live because I know my brother is with me. And like I said, he was a ranger, a DCR ranger at the Massachusetts State House for 20 years.
What is a DCR ranger?
Department of Conservation and Recreation. So they work
at all. Kind of like a forest ranger, kind of without a forest, a park services, a ranger. Yeah. Okay. Okay.
Yeah. And he loved his job, and he loved the State House, and he loved Boston. But anyone who worked with him could tell you he also loved to make people laugh. He loved to help. He was always one of those like helpers. And so after he passed, you know, all of his ranger colleagues, they came to his services. And even years later, you know, when I ran my first Boston, my second Boston marathon, I met up with rangers outside of the State House. And, you know, one of the rangers he worked with offered to give me, he always carried with him Teddy's pen. And I said, I can't take this because I know I'll lose it in the middle of the race. I want you to keep it. But that stuck with me. Like, he's been gone for all these years and you're still carrying his pen. And so I was at the State House on Monday for the Massachusetts Coalition of Suicide Prevention's annual State House event, where they honor people who demonstrate leadership in suicide prevention. And it was the first time I was in the State House since my brother had passed almost 7 years ago. And I didn't expect it to be difficult because it's just a building. But when I walked in and realized nobody here, the rangers are all different. They're young. They're the same age as my oldest child. They don't remember my brother. And my brother isn't even a memory at this point. Like, that absence of his memory and his absence felt really strong. And I didn't expect it to affect me in the way that it did. And on my way home, I started to get really emotional about it. And it's about an hour's ride. And I was in my head and I was starting to spin and I was starting to cry and feel those angry feelings. And I thought, you know what? Like, I need to do something. And I had to make a choice, like, because there are so many things I could fall back on. I had so many, you know, less healthy coping mechanisms in those early years, food and alcohol and shopping and rage. And I thought, I don't want this to be how this day goes. And that's where running has been a lifeline, because I thought, you know what? I'm going to the gym. And I got on the treadmill and I was like, I need to do 8 miles because I'm that angry. And I was like, well, do I really need to do 8 miles? I decided, as I started running and I started feeling better and like less that I needed to do something to like destroy my life, I was like, okay, 4 is good. 4 is good. I'm tired. I can go home, have dinner with the family. Like,
I re-regulated, which was the goal.
Re-regulated. I chatted with some of my friends in the suicide loss community. And they're like, I get it. And it felt good that, like, I don't know, I had that validation, but also I was glad that I had the, I don't know, wherewithal to like recognize I'm feeling dysregulated. It's because of this activating moment in the State House that has nothing to do with my brother being gone, but with my brother not being a fixture anymore, that like other people's lives have moved on. And I'm glad that I was able to make that choice. But years ago, that wouldn't have happened. And I think there's a reason I never went inside the State House in all those years, because I don't think that it would have ended well.
Yeah, you're exactly right. Those things can still come from nowhere. And I feel like the same can happen, like you said, for just a good day and a bad day. You can sometimes wake up. I still do. Not often, not every single week, but I still wake up, I would say, regularly enough to talk about it and just feel that heaviness. Just know that it's not going to be a good day. It's usually because something's at front of mind. It may be because of something I dreamt. We don't always know. But there's times that, and usually my husband sees it on my face, or I'll be crying and then he knows for sure. But usually, and it's just become rhetoric that I use that I probably don't even recognize, that I'll just say certain things and he knows. Like, I don't have to say, I'm just missing Alex. I can say that sometimes. I'll say, I'm just missing Alex. But sometimes I'll just say, I don't know. And then I'll start to cry. And he knows that it's just that one of those moments or days has cropped up. And when you talk about what you did to re-regulate, to deal with it, it brings to mind something that just happened yesterday. And of course, I won't name any names, but there's a mom in my community that I've known for several years now, or close to several years. It feels like I've known her forever. You become very close to people, you know, after you bond over a loss like this. But she had reached out to call me yesterday. I didn't know why. And so I reached back out after I was done working. I was on a call and said, I'm so sorry I missed your call. Did you need something? And she literally was just needing to connect because she'd had such a bad day, was missing her daughter. And she said, I just have had such a bad day and needed to tell somebody, basically. I don't know what her exact words were, but just like you reached out to some people that understand. Even though I wasn't able to answer, what she did was kind of what you did. I have some options in front of me. Some can be bad choices. Like, I don't know if this would have been her option. I'm not quoting her on this, but I can either go home and, you know, have a big stiff drink, eat a piece of cheesecake, whatever, or I can do X, Y, Z. So she had tried to reach out to me, just putting in words to somebody, even if they aren't able to answer, that you're just sad and having a bad day. When it's someone that understands, that is like you're giving it to them, versus people that don't understand, that you feel like they're almost forcing you to keep it, right? Because they go, oh, sorry, but you know, they don't get it, right? And so when I said, do you need me to still call? And this is where it ties into what you said. She said something to akin to, you can if you want to, but I'm fine. I made the choice to, what'd she say? I made the choice to go to my favorite crystal store and run to the car barefoot in the rain. And it helped so much. And so she made a choice to do something that was good for her heart and soul that helped reset her. It didn't make the sadness necessarily go away, so to speak, but it helped her get out of that end, that panic that she was feeling when it just kind of piled on for the day and she wasn't doing anything to re-regulate. So I just like pointing out that whether you meant to or not, you just gave people a really good message of, we can learn ways to help ourselves in those moments that are not running back to the fridge, whether it be to grab the wine, the cheesecake, or both, head to the sofa and watch whatever all night long. Been there, done that. So I would love for you to now go into the place where you talk about, from that running, where you've gone from there.
All right. So like I said, pandemic hits. You know, the prior years, my family had participated in a local charity's like Suicide Prevention Month 5K as Team Teddy. And we were always a very big team. I think we were the biggest team they had there in 2019 with Samaritans. And it was like, it became a virtual event. And I was like, okay, like, how can I honor my brother in a way that feels good, but also lets me maybe show somebody else that they're not alone? And my brother was like the type of person that would walk a million miles if it meant making somebody feel better, even if it was just for a few minutes. So I thought, right, now that I'm in this walking routine, I'm going to dedicate the first 5K of every day to somebody who's been lost to suicide. And it's not just dedicating it. I try to connect with the family and learn about their person, learn about what they miss most. And it's not just sharing the person who died, but holding space for the people who are left behind. And I started using the hashtag healing miles, because honestly, not just for myself, but for the others, it became literally like paved a path toward healing for myself and opened up a world, a community of people who have been impacted by this traumatic loss. And even though it's not always the same, it might be a sibling, a child, a, you know, friend, colleague, we're still united by this horrible, terrible moment that changes your life forever. And after that month, I realized like my inbox was full. I could walk every single day for the rest of my life and only touch a fraction of these individuals. So I decided to continue it. But rather than every day, because I found for my own self-care, I needed to give myself some space, doing it, you know, a few times a week or a few times a month. Or if I, you know, had somebody had a milestone coming up, a birthday, I would buy a couple of Dunkin' Donuts gift cards and put a little note on them and pass them out on my walk, like a random act of kindness in memory of this person. And then shortly, like the next year around my brother's anniversary, I was having a really griefy night. I was up, I was miserable, and I was just doom scrolling on social media. And I saw this post from the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention about walk a marathon in a month and raise awareness and funds for suicide prevention. And I thought, like, I could do that. Like, I mean, I walk a marathon every few days. So, okay, like, what can I do to make it more meaningful? And I came up with this random arbitrary number of I'm going to walk 300 miles because if when I do things, like, I have to overdo them, obviously. So I decided on 300 miles and every day was dedicated to somebody else. And that was my first experience with AFSP. And it was a really positive experience. I got a lot of encouragement and community and support from not just the families of those who I was walking for, but from AFSP. And I discovered there were all these resources out there for people that I didn't even know existed. And when the month ended, I got in my inbox like, hey, you recently participated in this. We've opened up Boston Marathon applications for the 2021 Boston Marathon, which that year was going to be held in October for the first time. It's generally in April. And I thought, God, like, what a way to honor my brother's memory than at an event that he loved to work on Marathon Monday. Like, that was always one of his favorite moments. Like, I can do this. And my family was like, you haven't run since 1990. Like, you're going to run one of the most difficult marathons in the world. Like, just, you're just going to run it. And I was like, oh, yeah, why not? We're not really sure this is a good idea. And then the Sicilian donkey and myself was like, doubled down and was like, well, now I have to run it. And I remember in mile 25, and I'm thinking, I don't think I can finish this. Thinking like, Teddy, like, I need you to get me to the finish line. And I saw a girl I went to high school with in the crowd. And she's like, what are you doing here? And I said, I'm running. What are you doing here? And she's like, oh, my husband's running. And I said, oh, she's like, he's a little bit behind you. And I thought, all right, Teddy, thank you. Like, motivation I needed. I need to beat her husband to the finish. As I was coming down Boylston Street, I could hear my mom's voice and all of that crowd. I could hear my mom. And I remember like, Teddy, we did this. And it was just such a magical day. And it gave me so much hope. You know, my brother's still gone and I felt him with me the whole way. You know, I met people along the route. I high-fived little kids. I pat dogs. I hugged anyone I could in the Wellesley Scream Tunnel. I mean, there were friends and family all along the route. It was magical and it felt good. And when I was done, like, Teddy, we did this together. And so even though he's gone, he runs with me every time I run. In every race, I save the last mile for him. And people are like, well, you know, but why do you dedicate every mile? Because why not? These people lived and they're still loved so much. And I want to share them. And I want even just one person to know, like, they're not alone in their grief or if they're in crisis. And I find that by sharing my journey and other people's journeys, like, I'm starting conversations that maybe some people were afraid to have. And like conversations that had my family had 7 years ago, maybe my brother would still be here. And so, you know, if you follow me on Instagram, you know, I have a lot of tattoos and I have one on each calf. On my right calf is a Sicilian donkey for myself. A female donkey is a Jenny, which is my name. And then on my left leg is a blue jay. And blue jays have always reminded me of my brother because they're clowns. They're playful and funny. And there's several that just hang out in my yard all the time. And I feel like they appear when I'm in the midst of like a big decision or something. And so every time I run, one step is for me and one step is for my brother. And it's become just a part of who I am. And I can't imagine going back to the way that I was.
Right. You can't imagine living back in the chasm because now, you know, you've built this magical track around the chasm, right? Where you can run and, you know, you've developed your own outcroppings and beautifications that exist that didn't exist when you were living in the chasm. And, you know, I'm so proud of you for doing that and such a inspiring story to hear of how you've done this for yourself, but you're bringing Teddy with you. And that's what I tell people all the time is their biggest fear of getting unstuck, if you will, from their grief, kind of pulling themselves away from it and starting towards healing, if you will. And again, that doesn't mean getting rid of your grief, but it means starting to heal the trauma and getting out of that dark place, is that they're going to have to leave their loved one behind to do it, or that people are expecting them to move on. Mm-hmm. And I always say it's not about moving on. It has to be about moving forward, and you have to bring them with you, like as part of it. Learn to live alongside of this and or learn to live alongside your person, right? Yep. And you have such a, I think, image that this evokes of every other step, one step's for you, one step's for Teddy. That's such a tangible way to think about what I tell people to do anyway. So everybody isn't going to do that. Some people are going to do it in different ways, but you know, and I don't run. I mean, I ran in high school in track. I was a short distance sprinter and a hurdler, a short distance hurdler, really good at super short distances, but I was never a runner, like, and that's not going to happen. So I mean, you just can assure you that's not going to happen, but I have for a long time planned and decided to wait when I kept beating myself up for not doing it to get a tattoo, a memory tattoo, because out of the tattoos I have, I don't have any that are memorial tattoos because I tend to think about things so long sometimes that I'm like, am I ever just going to do this? So this year on Alex's birthday, I'm going to get one I've wanted to get for a while. And it's I want to get his baby feet on top of my right foot so that he can walk with me. To be a reminder, because he is walking with me. Everything I'm doing, he's right here with me. We're doing this together. But that will be my physical reminder that he's with me. I'm taking these steps with him because I have a tattoo on the other side that comes around my ankle that I've had since before Alec, when he was, that's a memorial to my children, but not a memorial as in they're gone. And so I want to somehow mirror that and make that, you know, that part of me as well. And I think that it's metaphorical, but you have such a realistic way of saying he's running with me. He's actually on this journey with me. And I want you to speak before we encapsulate your why and kind of revisit the Instagram channel for just a minute. So this allows me to go back and talk a little bit about AFSP, because you did talk about how AFSPs walk and the mileage was, you know, running that virtual marathon was what brought AFSP to the forefront. Talk about what you do with AFSP now, what your role is, how they have become more important in your life. Some of my listeners have heard me say that I've had mixed experiences throughout the country with AFSP. I know they do amazing work for suicide prevention and studying suicide and that stuff, but I had found in towns that it was harder for me to get support as a suicide loss survivor. And I know that's not the case in every, there's many communities that have a lot of good support with AFSP, and they're doing such amazing work that I want you to take a moment to highlight the amazing work that's happening there at the Massachusetts AFSP in your area and what you do to get involved, and then tie that back to your Instagram which is how we connected. And you have an amazing feed that everybody should follow. But will you go from AFSP to why you post what you post on Instagram?
Absolutely. So like I said, AFSP just kind of came up in my social media feed. I didn't really know anything about it. And then I got involved with the marathon in a month. And I had an opportunity to speak with my city council about the work that I was doing. And I really wanted to highlight just some of the young people that I was dedicating walks to. One was 10 years old. There was one from our city. And I reached out to AFSP and asked the executive director, Jessica Vanderstad, if she would attend city council with me and share some of the resources that are available in hopes of getting a recommendation to speak with the school committee. This was my first time meeting anyone from AFSP. And Jessica came down. We wore masks in city council because it was, you know, early 2021. And I shared my story. And, you know, our city council was very receptive and interested to learn more and did recommend that I speak with the school committee. But following, I walked with Jessica from our city hall to meet her boyfriend, who was waiting to pick her up and bring her home. And we connected and we talked. And it was like one of the first times that I really felt like a hope. I was like, what? Like, I want to learn more. Like, just talking with her filled me with so much hope. And so I started reaching out, like, how can I get involved? And I realized there are these out of the darkness community walks. They're held all over the country. In Massachusetts, there are 8 or 9 of them. And, you know, I was a little hesitant, my first walk event, because I wasn't really sure what to expect. Is it going to be this like sad, awful experience? And it wasn't. My first walk was the Philadelphia area walk, which sounds strange. But during that marathon in a month, I met a family who lost their dad to suicide. And I became really friendly with the daughter, Morgan, and her family had a big team. And I thought, you know what, I'm going to bring my youngest son, Joey, and we're going to have a mom son trip. And we're going to run the rocky stairs, and we're going to see Philadelphia. And we're going to experience this walk with a family that I've grown to know. And when I say it was the most moving and beautiful day, yes, there were moments of tears and moments of sadness, but overall, like, I felt hopeful. And I was glad to share it with my youngest son, who probably didn't always understand why, you know, I was grieving the way that I was, or maybe didn't quite remember Uncle Teddy. And to see him wearing a button with his little handwriting that said, "I walk for Uncle Teddy," like, it made me realize, like, we can move forward and we can remember Teddy, but we can also be part of this beautiful community that is so supportive. And so I just kept getting more and more involved with AFSP. And last year I joined the board of the Massachusetts chapter. And so over the course of the year, attended all sorts of events, became trained in their Talk Saves Lives program, did tabling events at local festivals and fairs. And I was just voted in as co-chair of the chapter, which I still am in shock that anyone wants me, you know, chairing anything. But, you know, like, I can't imagine my life without the community of AFSP. And in January, we attended the National Leadership Conference. So all of the chapters from around the country come together and talk about kind of the state of the organization, goals for the coming year, stories of hope. And, you know, it's a heavy topic to be spending days talking about. But at the same time, like, I came home feeling energized and excited about all the possibilities that we have to connect with people and show people that there is hope after suicide loss. And, you know, I tend to make friends pretty easily. I think maybe just because I can't shut my mouth ever. And I feel like when I attend these events, I always make a connection with someone who maybe comes from a different walk of life or is nothing like me. But you know what? We connected on this one piece. And you know what? like, I want to know more about you and I want to support you. And, you know, it was my first experience with one of our new board members from Massachusetts. And she and I connected that first afternoon. We had some time together and we sat by the pool and we just talked about our loss and how it impacted our families. We just talked about everything. It was just a beautiful afternoon. And this morning, she texted me pretty early and said, I read your post this morning and it really got to me. I didn't want to get out of bed. I canceled my class on Monday and Tuesday. You know, I just telling you for accountability because I'm not in a good place. And we chatted a little bit and I was like, how can I support you? Because I get it. I've been there. And she said, oh, just texting you and making sure I make sure that I'm doing what I was supposed to do. And I said, oh, I can do that. I'll be very annoying and nagging. And she's like, no, I love that. But it's like having somebody that gets it and knows that when you reach out, like, it's not like, oh, this is a crisis. We need to handle this right away. Just, do you want solutions? Do you want support? Like, what can I do? And I've only known her several months, and yet she's probably become one of the most important people in my life. And I feel like that's what the loss survivor community does. Like, you build relationships that you wouldn't have had otherwise.
With some of the most amazing people. And, you know, I'm constantly in awe of that fact, and I'm constantly aware of why we're connected. And I have yet to decide, and probably will never know, just like there's lots of answers we're never going to get, of are these people this amazing because of their loss, or does the loss just bring that out in them, right? Does the loss just connect us? I don't know. I don't know the answer, but I have literally I think I'm the best version of myself. I would go back to the not best version of myself to have Alex back, but that's not my journey. But I also am surrounded by people that are the best people I've had in my life, my whole life. And some of that is an awareness too, that we didn't have before, of we weren't always making the best choices of the people that were in our life. And I think that having this crystal clear perspective connects people on that level, because they connect from an authentic place in themselves. And this loss, whether we want it to or not, sheds so much bullshit from who we are that you are stripped down to what you are, right?
I talk about it a lot. Like, the person I was before my brother died, I was not the best version of myself. I was a people pleaser, and I really shut down big pieces of who I was because I thought that's what other people wanted from me. And I wasn't a happy person. You know, I wasn't miserable, but I wasn't happy. I didn't feel fulfilled. A lot of my relationships were with people who weren't always great for me, mm-hmm. but because I didn't know how to set boundaries or surround myself with meaningful relationships, I was doing things because I thought that's what was expected of me. And while I don't ever want to go back there, I would trade it for a moment with my brother. And now I find that as I show up authentically and I am unapologetically myself.
Me too, ma'am.
You know, like, it was difficult for a lot of people who have been in my life for a long time to accept, like, wow, this is who she is. But it also shifted my circle of friends. Like, the people that show up for me and who I feel like I can show up for every day, that group is so different. Mm-hmm. And I never, ever once questioned, do they want me here? And I think that is a huge change. And I find myself, like, making connections and building relationships with people who I feel if I can be myself with. If I cannot be myself with you, then it's probably not a good fit.
Yeah, I 100% agree. And in talking about, you know, that chasm that we talked about earlier, It with everything you just said, it makes me think that because somebody asked me a question yesterday that I don't know if I've been asked since Alex died, but they said, are you fulfilled in your life? And they were speaking specifically to the leftover pieces, not just this podcast, but everything that I do in the leftover pieces, because they're considering a life of doing some service to help as well. And she said, is it fulfilling to you? And I didn't even hesitate. I said, oh, yes. Oh, yes. I am driven from a place of passion that I never understood when like ministers and people would say it was a calling, right? It was a calling. I never put myself in that category of somebody that would say this is my heart's calling. This is my heart's calling. Now, God damn it, Alex. I didn't want my calling to be this. Just like you didn't want your calling to be this. We'd rather have our kids back and live a mundane life, and our brother back and have a mundane life, and our friends and our spouses and everybody we've lost. We'd rather have them back.
Absolutely.
But when you allow yourself to rise to the level that we're honoring their life, and the bigger part is we're learning to honor who we are. And it made me think as you were talking that as I answered that question yesterday, if somebody said to me, are you happy? I don't think I would hesitate to say I am. And in some ways, I'm happier than I've ever been. And that happiness exists around the chasm.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So it's an and world. It's not an or world.
Not an or world.
We don't get I think part of the way reason I can say I'm happier than I've ever been. It's a different happiness than I would have known before, because the happiness exists right alongside the devastation that I have now accepted into part of who I am, right? I've now accepted, you know, all of it, and I don't like the word acceptance, but I now understand it's part of it. The permanence is there. I understand the reality. And with that has come understanding and looking at joy and happiness differently. While I also experience them differently, I don't know about you, but I also appreciate joy and happiness and memorable moments on a level that's so much deeper. I didn't know I needed to appreciate all of these things as much as I do now. So now when I have a good day or whatever, I appreciate it on a level that I just didn't before. When I get upset with little things, I find myself so much easier to come to a place of going, but think of the positive side of it. Good example is, you know, I currently have my daughter and grandchildren living with me, and it can be very difficult. You're not meant to live with your mom and your four kids when you're this age, and it's temporary and it's a step that they need. But in the moments I'm frustrated about it, I very quickly can get to the place of going, but this is a gift. These memories will last a lifetime. When they lived with grandma and we did things that we wouldn't otherwise do if we weren't living under the same roof. And I don't know if I could have gotten to those places before. I would have stayed stuck in that this is a pain in the butt. This is hard. How quickly can we get them to move on? And don't get me wrong, they need to move on. It's better for them. It's better for everybody. But I wouldn't have been able to stop and appreciate the moment. And now I can quickly transition to the moment because of my perspective. When you say your perspective has changed on happiness and...
Oh, absolutely. But I think for a long time, I struggled with that and. So feeling grief and joy, like I would always feel guilt for feeling joy. And it's taken mm-hmm. a long time to accept that the grief is always going to be there. I'm always going to have... We always call it like, so some, anyone who knew my brother at one point or another uttered the words effing Teddy. And I'm always going to have those effing Teddy moments where I'm just like, really? Like, why is this my life? And then you experience these moments of intense joy, and it's okay. It's okay to experience that alongside the grief. And you know, I never really took pictures before. And after Teddy passed, I asked if he was photographed everything. I asked if I could have his photo albums. And now I photograph everything. And my mother's always like, oh, I don't want my picture. I don't like my picture. I said, Mom, someday all we will have are these pictures.
Mm-hmm.
And so she's become a little bit more open to having her photograph taken. Mm-hmm. But I think she gets it. Like, these are the moments that I want to remember everything, every minute. I mean, there are those years I have no recollection of. I want to remember the mundane moments of joy and the big moments of joy, like everything.
Yeah. It changes it all. My ex-mother-in-law, my kid's grandma, never wanted to be in photographs and was in some begrudgingly. But after losing Alex, she now willingly has her photograph taken. I don't think she likes it. And she may listen to this episode and she'll probably laugh if she does. I'm sure she still doesn't like it. I don't like my photograph being taken either. However, just like her, I have learned how precious it is to be able to look back and see, because some of her most cherished photos are now with Alex in them. She can look back and see, and it helps recall those memories. She doesn't want to not have those, like you said, for her grandchildren, great-grandchildren going forward. She doesn't want to be absent from those memories. And I think that's a really brave step, just small realizations, right? So talk about when you started your Instagram channel and what you do with that. And that's a good way for us to segue into, I think that's why you wanted to do the podcast and to be able to talk a little bit about your message of hope for anybody that's listening. But why don't you start that with giving them a hopeful place to go, which I think is your Instagram channel. So talk about started it and why you continue it like you do.
All right. So, like everything I do, I didn't have any plan when I started my Instagram handle. So my Instagram handle is jen.and.pen, which my kids always make fun of. They say it's weird, but the pen, like I'm a writer. It is not intended to be Jen and a writing instrument. It's Penelope, the dog that you can see in the background, probably. Penelope really got me through those moments when I was up all night. Penelope sat with me through everything. She is my soul dog. And I wanted to share my journey because I realized nobody talks about suicide loss. Nobody talks about suicide grief. And I think had somebody shown me that there's a way to live and to travel through this horrible journey and not feel alone, I think I would have started healing like long before I had. And so I'm very open in my sharing. I share if I'm having a bad grief night. I share memories of my brother. I share other people's stories through the Healing Miles. But I started, I love my coffee. Coffee reminds me of Sundays at my grandma's house. The smell, just the taste of it. It reminds me of all the times that my family was whole. And we spent sitting around my grandmother's table laughing and joking and arguing and doing all the things that Sicilians do. And so I look forward to my morning cups of coffee. And I started sharing with my coffee a morning thought, like kind of a reflection. And it could be something I was feeling and experiencing or something that I'd been thinking about, or sharing resources or what I'm looking forward to and hopeful for. And over time, I noticed that it resonated with people, and people who maybe followed me but never interacted would send me a private message and say, you know what, like what you wrote today really resonated with me. I really needed to hear that today. Thank you. And I thought, maybe I should keep doing this. And now several years in, this is my main way. It's almost like a journal in some ways, because I mean, you've seen, I don't hold back anything I'm feeling. I'm going to share, but I also share not just how I'm feeling, but maybe a perspective that could help someone else, a tool that, all right, here's why I could be feeling this. Here's some tools to help. And so I continue that and my running journey, because I feel like they're interconnected, because for me, running is a big piece of my mental health toolkit. And when I'm injured and I'm not able to run, that's also an opportunity to share, like, because so many runners that I have encountered use running and activity as a way to manage their own mental health. Like when you're injured, how do you do that? And so that's become an opportunity. As much as I hated every minute of being injured, you know what? It's an opportunity. And so I'm connecting not just with loss survivors, but regular people out there or runners. And it's built this community of people I wouldn't have otherwise known. And I've gotten to watch their journeys, and they've inspired me in ways that they probably have no idea, and found accounts like yours that have helped me through some of these really difficult times, because I can just put a podcast on when I'm driving somewhere and listen, and I can hear, okay, I'm not the only one that feels this way. Like, I am not the only person having this effing Teddy moment. And it's okay. Like, it's okay. And knowing it's okay to feel everything that you're feeling, having that, like, I don't want to say permission, but just that validation has been hugely healing for myself. But also, I love that I'm able to use writing, which has been something I've always loved doing, use writing to connect with other people and help them in a way that my brother probably would have helped them just by being himself. That to me is, it brings a lot of meaning to what I do.
I love your account. It comes across my feed almost always at the right moment when I need that lift or that connection that you have. And I love the engagement that you've gotten from it. You've inspired me to make a few changes that I've been wanting to make anyway. And we'll talk about that later off recording. But I absolutely love it. And I want everybody to connect. And it's funny, I love hearing that Jen and Penn is Penelope, because I too assumed it was a pen. You know, that you are writing your thoughts, you're putting your thoughts out there. And so it is Jen and Penn, and there's a period on either side of the "and." That's the best way to find it. Her beautiful smiling face is there, so you'll know it's her, because she shares this wonderful radiant smile on such a regular basis that just the smile is all I need to see sometimes, Jen. It really helps and it makes a difference. And I love the coffee thoughts. I love, you know, when I see you holding that coffee cup, I know there's something about to come. And sometimes it's really, like you said, upbeat, motivational. And other times it's like, here's the shit storm I'm sitting in the middle of right now. And you just let everybody know. And so I love the realness of it. So I hope everybody, if they're not already following you, will, to not only support you, but to get support from you, because that's what you just radiate. And can you end today by digging out one more piece of hope for anybody that's listening?
Gosh, one more piece. I feel
you've
like
given so many nuggets of hope, but have you thought about what your bigger why is for doing this? That would be a good piece of hope.
And my bigger why is I want everyone to talk about everything. Like, when I think about how communication has changed in my household since my brother died. And sometimes I'll call my best friend and be like, oh, you know, my oldest son was in Italy and his friend left his bag with his passport in a restaurant. And we just both start laughing. And she said, would you have ever told your mother that? And I think, no, this is amazing. Like, I love that my kids feel comfortable to come to me with anything. And I feel as a society, like, if we can just talk and not put parameters around what we're allowed to talk about, I think we'll be able to impact others' lives and encourage people to reach out for help and encourage those who are grieving to reach out for the support. Because like you've said, this is the most amazing community of people I've ever encountered. And I've experienced hope daily as a result. So, you know, I wouldn't have experienced it had I continued stuffing that grief down.
I love that. That's such a great way to end, because you touched on all the things that you touched on throughout the conversation we had, which was healing and having conversations, period, communication, period, sharing yourself, sharing with others. And one of my big biggies, you touched on how important community and support is. So, what a great way to wrap it up. And this has been a complete honor. I'm so glad that we did this. I'm so glad that we connected on this way. I hate the reason.
Same.
And there's the "and" I hate the reason, but the reason is there. So I'm really glad that we connected and now know each other, now are in each other's lives for whatever that means. Right, Jen? So
that makes me so happy, because, you know, I feel like in a very short period of time, I've gotten to know you in a way I wouldn't have otherwise. And it's incredibly meaningful, and it makes me angry. And it's like one of those effing Teddy moments, but like, I'm grateful for you. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right back at you, ma'am. Thank you so much. And we will talk soon.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Grievers, it is my hope that from today, you will take that which serves you and simply leave the rest. I would love to connect with you, and the best way to do that is to start out on my website, where the first thing you'll find is a video recorded message from me. And then from there, you can find everything I offer. The online Zoom support groups, the books I've written, ways to connect for the podcast, and an entire resource library assembled to help all suicide loss grievers find the resources that they need to help them along their healing journey. Please go to theleftoverpieces.com. From there, I hope that we can connect, and I hope that you too can discover that we truly are better together. If anything that you've heard in today's episode resonates with you, I would ask that you please subscribe to get notified every week of my new episodes. And then take a moment to rate and review me on Apple Podcasts so that more grievers like us can find this podcast and this community. It is from my own experience of finding myself sitting amid the leftover pieces of my own shattered heart that I can tell you that while it seems impossible in the early days, it is possible to put those pieces back together and be okay again. And every week, we'll be right here providing more comfort, hope, and community. So until next week, I'll sign off today with some words from one of my Alex's favorites, Peter Pan. Never say goodbye, because goodbye means going away, and going away means forgetting. Grievers, no one here is forgetting. Talk soon.